According to Dr. Haslein's theory of time in a vehicle traveling nearly the speed of light, the Earth has aged nearly 700 years since we left it.
Well, we've aged hardly at all. This much is probably true.
The men who sent us on this journey are long since dead and gone.
Tell me, though.
Does man, that marvel of the universe, that glorious paradox who sent me to the stars, still make war against his brother? Keep his neighbor's children starving?
Great science fiction is about presenting a different world so we might look inward at our own. No one could have predicted that a story about a civilization of monkeys would contain enough ingredients for nearly 50 years of cinematic exploration. During its history, the Planet of the Apes has been used to comment on counterculture, animal cruelty, the Cold War, civil rights, the Holocaust, slavery, science, religion, and capitalism. But what each of these subjects boils down to is the theme of human nature. I'm Nick Nyland, and this is Keynotes. Each episode, I examine the innovative ways music is used in film. For the podcast Maiden Voyage, we'll start big, a three-part series about the soundtracks of the Planet of the Apes franchise in the light of this year's release of War for the Planet of the Apes. My main focus will be on Jerry Goldsmith's original 1968 score and its connection to the new prequel trilogy, Rise, Dawn, and War for the Planet of the Apes. A word of warning. I'll be spoiling plot elements from the Apes films I'm discussing because talking about the plot is necessary to understand the context of the music. This episode, Part 1, will only contain spoilers for the original film. Part 2 will be discussing Rise and will have spoilers for that film. Part 3 will discuss Dawn and War, so likewise on that. Sorry, I won't be talking much about the original sequels, the television show, or Danny Elfman's score for the Tim Burton remake, but I may reference them in passing. Okay, first let's get started with a little history. Before we talk about the groundbreaking music of Planet of the Apes, we have to start with what it's not. This is Eric Wolfgang Korngold. This is from the 1940s swashbuckler, The Seahawk. For a long time, this type of romantic orchestral score would dominate the Hollywood soundtrack. It's this kind of sweeping symphonic sound for which Star Wars and Indiana Jones are drumming up nostalgia. This music was highly emotional and tonal. It embraced the leitmotif, assigning often very memorable themes to different characters and situations. But in the mid-20th century, film music was changing. Filmmakers began taking a different approach. These prototypal scores of classical Hollywood were falling out of vogue. A new generation of post-war directors and composers began cutting in popular music, modernist jazz, and sounds of the avant-garde. A Streetcar Named Desire, composed by Alex North in 1951, is regarded as the first all-jazz musical score. Jazz allowed composers to introduce a new level of chaos and complexity to their film music. They were able to feature instruments in fresh ways, ways outside of the rigid conventions of the romantic orchestra. Elmer Bernstein's soundtrack for The Man with the Golden Arm would follow. A film about a big band drummer addicted to heroin, the jazz soundtrack acts as both a literal reference to the character's world and a way to create a sense of the offbeat. The persistent drums might represent his nagging addiction, The aggressive piano might suggest the conflict or dissonance his drug habit brings about. Western, the quintessential American film genre, very much embrace the romantic orchestral tradition. These scores use this tradition to retain a sense of timelessness and geographic neutrality, with a few exceptions. Native Americans, often othered and painted as frightening savages, were given a musical treatment to play up the contrast with the conventional Western musical mode. The complex qualities of authentic Native American music are tooled to sound discordant when played alongside the European tradition, and other parts are simplified to sound crude and primitive. So racist cliches are established. First, we have the theme of the white main characters, and their love and desire for home. This melody is taken from the Civil War song, Lorena. Now let's play the Comanche theme. In the 1960s, the civil rights movement foregrounded the country's racial inequalities. The classical Western, where civilized white men were pitted against Native Americans depicted as savages, seemed more and more problematic. New subversive styles began to develop. Filmmaker Sergio Leone and composer Ennio Morricone upended the American Western tradition as they constructed what is now considered the spaghetti Western. The worlds in these films are tinged with mockery and cynicism, and they're made up of morally gray characters. Here, the romantic Western tradition is done away with, replaced by something playful and stylistic, totally disinterested in grounding the world in something familiar. There's a cartoonish quality to these themes, but somehow also at the same time a sense of gravity and seriousness. Morricone injected a pop affect into his scores, incorporating sound effects like whip cracks, gunshots, vocal grunts, and hoofbeats. He wasn't afraid to mix instruments and musical styles in odd combinations. Jew's Harp might play alongside surfy electric guitar or Spanish trumpets, and it all might be driven by South American percussion instruments. It's all very ethnically fluid. There is no other in a Morricone score because the entire musical landscape sounds otherworldly. These very distinct instruments often battle it out to build suspense. The tom-toms softly beat out a tense rhythm. A piano trades a skittish motif with the violin. The soundscape underneath is colored by a harmonica, an instrument indicative of the Wild West, but also a Japanese flute. There's a blend of completely different ethnic folk instruments. We'll definitely return to some of these techniques when we get to Planet of the Apes. There was perhaps no mainstream genre more free to experiment musically than science fiction. New electronic instruments allowed composers to create textures that elicited the sounds of the future. 1956's Forbidden Planet made history by throwing out the orchestra and sticking exclusively to custom-built electronic instruments. Guided by a book written by an MIT mathematician, Lewis and B.B. Baron used homemade circuitry to make the sounds of the film. Forbidden Planet's sonic palette is like nothing else. Musically, it lacks a tonal center, and most of the time it's hard to tell which sounds are music and which are sound effects. The score to Forbidden Planet was so unorthodox that the Baron's film credit was electronic tonalities rather than music. Bernard Herrmann's compositions for The Day the Earth Stood Still in 1951 were among some of the first to incorporate the theremin in sci-fi film. With its wild oscillating frequencies, this instrument would go on to become recognizable as the go-to sound of the flying saucer, as well as a mood setter for all that is spooky and supernatural. New sound technology also afforded Herrmann the ability to manipulate his recordings. Inspired by the avant-garde musique concrète movement, he reworked sound recordings to make them sound totally different than their source. Listen as he plays a cymbal strike in reverse so it grows and swells to a stop. Bernard Herrmann did not approach every science fiction film he worked on the same way. Though the music in The Day the Earth Stood Still was created by electronics, his strategy for scoring 1959's Journey to the Center of the Earth was different, but equally inventive. For one thing, he did away with the string section, one of the most central instrument families in the film music lexicon. In Journey, Herrmann took a kind of literal approach to the notion of descent, designing musical motifs around rising and falling phrases and choosing instruments in lower registers to suggest the underground. Lots of strange and clever ideas in Journey to the Center of the Earth. Bernard Herrmann's most startling choice is the inclusion of a centuries-old instrument called a serpent. Part brass, part woodwind, this snake-like bass instrument is the distant ancestor of the tuba. The use of the serpent coincides with the film's reveal of a giant lizard. Go Goldsmith would cite Herrmann as an influence. This technique of using an instrument to evoke the presence of a beast or animal is used a lot in Planet of the Apes. Jerry Goldsmith cut his teeth at CBS Radio and Television, working on shows like Frontier Gentlemen, Playhouse 90, and Climax. He eventually moved to feature films and would go on to become one of the most versatile film composers in history, producing music in nearly every genre. A lover of the avant-garde, he was always looking for an opportunity to break out of the traditional mold. He had an interest in early 20th century modernist musical movements that were experimenting with the form. Here in his 1962 score for Freud, he was able to incorporate some of those influences. In addition to some subtle electronic treatments, Goldsmith liked using staccato rhythms, particularly low-register piano, to drive suspense and evoke psychological confusion. Goldsmith's continuous return to the piano as an instrument of mania is reminiscent of some of the abstract work of Aaron Copland. Copland's Piano Variations piece from 1930 is rhythmically irregular, teeming with crude bursts of chaos. Goldsmith will mix all of these influences into a stew, disorienting music detached from a singular tradition, a sense of randomness, timelessness. Odd instruments, or familiar instruments played oddly, experimentation with recordings. We've made connections to all of these genres because there's a little of all of them in The Planet of the Apes. It's got the outer space elements of The Day the Earth Stood Still, but also the terrestrial science fiction quality of Journey to the Center of the Earth. The Western is evoked with its wide-open rocky landscapes and its concern with the primitive and the civilized. You've got apes on horseback with rifles and Charlton Heston's cool cynicism, which almost makes him like a gunslinger anti-hero. So now, let's finally talk Planet of the Apes. The Planet of the Apes was directed by Franklin Schaffner and adapted from a 1963 novel by Pierre Boulle. The film follows a group of astronauts who crash land on a strange planet. At first it seems deserted, but soon they come across a terrifying inversion of the natural order. On this world, humans are feral, mute beings who have become hunted and subjugated by a civilization of intelligent apes. Goldsmith latches onto this inversion with his score. He's interested in mixing the familiar and unfamiliar, creating a disorienting soundscape that keeps the listener on edge. The music itself is nervous, uncertain, punctuated by brief entrances and exits of instruments and sudden changes in tempo. Coming up here is not from Planet of the Apes. It's a piece by Arnold Schoenberg. Goldsmith took inspiration from Schoenberg in a method of composition called the 12-tone technique, or more specifically a variant called serialism. Picture a piano keyboard. Serialism gives balanced play to all 12 notes on the semitonal scale, so a composer would use all the white keys and also all the black keys. There are additional complicated rules that guide which order the notes are to be played and restrict the composer from playing the same note twice until all the other notes are played first. Understanding the theory isn't necessarily important for our purposes. What is important is the effect. This lack of tonal grounding is disconcerting. It confuses the listener, who is trained to expect notes arranged in a key. It's equally full of harmony and dissonance, feeling lawless and nihilistic. Goldsmith chose this technique for its alienating effect, and it became an important unifying backbone for his score. In 1966, 2 years before Apes, another sci-fi film, Fantastic Voyage, was hugely successful. That score by Leonard Rosenman, who by the way would compose the music for the sequel to the original Planet of the Apes, uses atonality and even the 12-tone system. It's possible this is why the studio was so open to Goldsmith employing similar techniques on Apes. Here's Fantastic Voyage. Okay, and coming back to the actual Planet of the Apes score. So in addition to the serialism, this world upside down in the film is imagined further by Goldsmith's unorthodox use of instruments, many of them obscure and from different parts of the world. He gives us moaning conch shells. Rattling anklungs, an Indonesian percussion instrument made from bamboo. And the scraping rhythms of the güira, which is a Latin American instrument you're probably familiar with. He used instruments in odd ways or just used non-instruments. He had his percussionists drumming on steel mixing bowls, his horn players blowing into their horns without the mouthpieces, and his string section often playing col legno, which means hitting their strings with the back part of their bows, the wood part. There's also electrified versions of instruments, electric harp and electric bass flute. Okay, coming up here we'll have the banging on those twangy steel mixing bowls I mentioned. The score's brilliance is that by using these instruments the quote-unquote wrong way, it makes the simian culture feel primitive and animalistic, but not specific to any culture we might be familiar with. Like the spaghetti western scores, ethnic ideas are borrowed and repurposed to create something that's entirely novel. It's uncanny, inhuman, primal. Thank you. Like Herman with the serpent, he finds ways to imitate animal noises. He makes ape-like sounds with a cuíca, a Brazilian friction drum. You'll hear some rattly percussion up front, but listen underneath to that kind of low rubbing sound. And here it is again on another cue. The film's most famous cue occurs when the apes are revealed for the first time in pursuit of the astronauts who have found themselves amongst a group of native humans. The tribal percussion reminds us of the primal urge for survival, and it hints at the primitive society we're about to be introduced to. Some snare drum here gives the apes a military presence. We keep coming back to this manic piano. We might think of this as an instrument often associated with civilized or cultured humanity in the West, and it's tossed into a terrified chaos as the humans become the hunted. Then, when the gorillas on horseback are finally revealed, Goldsmith brings in the ape-sounding cuíca underneath a ram's horn. Ram's horn is an ancient horn that can only sound two notes, and here it's blown alarmingly like a hunting bugle. There's a sense that this composition and a lot of Planet of the Apes is influenced by the Rite of Spring. Let's play a little bit of that piece. This is Igor Stravinsky's ballet masterwork that's in the DNA of countless film scores, including Star Wars and Jaws and Bernard Herrmann's Psycho. This particular section, the ritual of abduction, kicks off as a young bride is ceremoniously abducted. Maybe it's this chase and capture component that links it with that previous scene from Planet of the Apes. The subject of The Rite of Spring is a pagan rite that involves human sacrifice. Stravinsky has been linked to the art movement primitivism, which is interested in the ancient or prehistoric. It favors rhythm over melody or harmony. The same can be said of Jerry Goldsmith's score. Okay, now listen to this cue from Planet of the Apes. Okay, now this section from The Rite of Spring called The Glorification of the Chosen Victim. And I'm going to take us back to apes just a second here. Here we are back at the Goldsmith. The other thing the Rite of Spring has in common with the apes score is they're both full of instruments played in ways they're not designed for. The Rite of Spring begins with a lyrical bassoon line. It's played in a much higher register than a bassoon's normal range, causing it to sound strained and almost unrecognizable. It sounds familiar to us, but we can't quite place it. A famous non-traditional use of orchestral instruments in Planet of the Apes is this signature whoosh of air sound effect. It's created by scraping a gong with wire brushes while a pair of horns are blown with their mouthpieces backwards. Oh, and that weird low dipping sound is a bass slide whistle, by the way. This is a regular slide whistle. It's that thing you hear in cartoons, usually. Goldsmith has them using a bass version of that. Here's another cool effect, dragging a bow across the resonator tubes of the vibraphone. Sometimes you'd have the celli and violas creating dissonances by bowing really small intervals apart. Here it's quarter tones, creating uncomfortable textures. Goldsmith might have picked this up from the avant-garde. Prepare your ears. This is Penderecki's piece about Hiroshima. But you might recognize similar dissonant techniques used by Hans Zimmer for The Dark Knight. This, of course, is the Joker's theme meant to suggest anarchy. Speaking of suspenseful strings, everybody knows Bernard Herrmann's famous Psycho Cue. Here's a moment on violins and piccolo from Planet of the Apes that almost seems to be a nod to this. Another person that provided Goldsmith big inspiration was Hungarian composer Béla Bartók. Goldsmith and other film composers were hugely influenced by Bartók, especially borrowing from him ideas for horror and suspense. The piece I'll play in just a few was used directly in The Shining, notably when Danny first discovers room 237, and when Danny and Wendy are playing in the maze. It's called Music for Strings, Percussion, and Celeste. First, let's listen to the very beginning of the Planet of the Apes score again, the main title theme played over credits. So the main thing I want to point out is that single note played in the piano's lower register, that E-flat, played at the start softly, then accelerating in power and speed. Now listen to the beginning of the third movement of Bartók's Music for Strings, Percussion, and Celeste. So same concept, just played higher in pitch and on the xylophone. This technique kicks off the film, and likewise it kicks off the third movement of Bartók's piece. Even though the Planet of the Apes rejects traditional film score conventions like the leitmotif, in other words, the characters of the film aren't usually represented by repeating themes, there is a sense of repeated ideas. Usually these similar sounding phrases aren't technically the same notes, but because of the intervals Goldsmith uses and the pantonal feel of the 12-tone technique, we get what sounds like a motif or a pseudo-motif. It appears big, brassy, and dramatic in part here when the spacecraft crashes. We'll get just a fragment of this melody before it builds into a big suspense chord. Now I'm just going to play back-to-back a bunch of different statements of this motif. And this is right when he says,
"Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!"
Phrases from this motive are used all over the film. If it's representing anything thematically, we might call it the human fear theme or the human panic theme. But really, it's just another way to paint the world as upside down. But now let's listen to the Béla Bartók piece again. This is in the middle of the third movement. Pretty similar. Goldsmith uses those same first five notes all over the score. I don't think there's any mistaking that he's referencing Béla Bartók here. Bartók developed a style referred to as night music, where he tries to make his music evoke the atmosphere of nature at night. Sometimes this involves his instruments imitating bird calls, like here, where he has a violin imitating a twittering nightingale. We've already discussed Goldsmith using the cowica to mimic ape noises, but also cleverly he uses a recurring musical approach to represent the feral humans of the apes' world who've regressed to a more primitive state. As the astronauts first come upon these wild humans, listen to the woodwinds. He uses these short phrases to sound like grunts or yaps or like a rudimentary language.
Thank you.
So, at this point, almost everyone knows the famous twist ending where Charlton Heston's Taylor discovers the Statue of Liberty on the beach, and the reveal that the planet he's crash-landed on, ruled by apes, is actually Earth in the distant future, sometime after mankind has destroyed itself. The film is full of organic and acoustic instruments, strange ones for sure, but there's mostly an acoustic quality to its aesthetic. To foreshadow the reveal that we're in the future, Goldsmith ran some of the orchestral recordings through a tape delay unit called an echoplex. The simplified version is that tape delays basically work by recording the incoming sound to a loop of magnetic tape, which plays it back afterwards again and again, creating an echo-like bounce-back effect. Coming up here is jazz trumpet player Don Ellis using it on one of his albums. Jerry Goldsmith loved this effect. He ended up using it in Patton on the Trumpet, supposedly to suggest Patton's belief in past lives or reincarnation. He also used it on the Calenio Strings and Alien as a horror suspense effect. On Planet of the Apes, Goldsmith most commonly ran the plucked strings and the electric harp through the echoplex, which gives the otherwise acoustic score a touch of spacey ambience. In this way, he's created a musicscape that's at once primordial and also the future. It's familiar and it's alien. Consider the subtlety here in contrast with another one of his science fiction scores, 1976's Logan's Run, which brings the synthesized elements entirely to the foreground. Planet of the Apes isn't a world of tech and wires, it's the future but not futuristic. On the other end of the spectrum is his approach to Star Trek the Motion Picture, which, despite the setting being centuries forward in human advancement, is old-fashioned. It's very traditionally orchestral, rousing, noble, and emotional. Star Trek is well known for its optimism, presenting mankind as the best it can be. Its theme songs are a celebration of our potential as a species. There's a unity and a musical cohesion to the score. Compare this to The Planet of the Apes, which is intentionally disjointed. The world has gone mad, and humanity never really had a chance. This Goldsmith Star Trek theme, by the way, would go on to become the main theme to Star Trek The Next Generation, the only Star Trek theme as recognizable as Alexander Courage's from the original series. Jerry Goldsmith continued to refine some of the avant-garde techniques he used on Planet of the Apes and future scores, including Alien. Here he returns to the experimentation with processing effects, the fragmented sparseness, and the creative orchestration to give a masterclass in using music to slowly build dread. Somehow he creates this paradox. We're feeling claustrophobic, but in the endless infinity of outer space. In this score, he would actually use the instrument we talked about earlier, the serpent, to produce this repulsive sound, like an alien creature grunting. And even before Alien, Goldsmith also used the serpent in his war score for Tora Tora Tora, which came out 2 years after Planet of the Apes. It's used less as an effect and much more melodically, but still for its unnerving timbre. Goldsmith's stamp would remain on the rest of the original series, but with an emphasis on different styles. He actually contributed to another one of the sequels, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, and he injected jazz more prominently into the mixture because that movie took place in the 1970s. The original series scores are interesting, but none of them remain in the cinematic consciousness quite like Goldsmith's original score. Countless composers count it as an influence. The score for the original Star Wars actually includes a cue that I have to believe is strongly influenced by the Planet of the Apes, and that's 9 years after the fact. The music for the Tusken Raiders. Interestingly enough, Star Wars is similar in that it's an alien adventure that doesn't use electronic music. The difference is, for one, Star Wars is interested in nostalgia for old Hollywood and adventure serials. It's a fantasy based on classical mythology. The music is meant to make the world feel timeless and familiar despite it being alien. Whereas in Planet of the Apes, the score is trying to make the world feel alien despite it being kind of familiar. After all, in Planet of the Apes, it's still Earth. In Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, James Horner took a cue from Goldsmith's use of the Echoplex on Planet of the Apes, Patton, and Alien, running Khan's brass motif through the device. The idea was, as this was Khan's revenge for Kirk's past sins, the echoed brass would suggest a rumination on the past. This is Johan Johansson's score from Sicario, and Johansson has cited Goldsmith and Planet of the Apes as an influence on his music before. Like Jerry Goldsmith, Johansson likes to experiment with composition and orchestration, and he especially likes to process his orchestra through kind of crazy digital manipulations. Final piece of trivia here. 2001 A Space Odyssey came out in 1968, the same year as Planet of the Apes. These two are often juxtaposed as they're both science fiction films, Apes being considered the genre film opposite 2001's art film status. 2001 was famously soundtracked with classical recordings, but some people don't know that it had an original score that was tossed out by Kubrick. That score was written by Alex North. North and Goldsmith were friends and had worked together a lot, so it's not impossible that Goldsmith heard these recordings while he was working on Planet of the Apes. The score for the sequence in 2001 with the great apes actually has woodwinds imitating ape sounds. Let's give it a listen. Smith would later go on to do a re-recording of North's original score for 2001, which was released in 1993. Charlton Heston's Taylor is a man who thinks little of humanity, but over the course of the film, he's forced to defend our species and sort of convinces himself of our worth. That's the dark irony that lies in the end reveal. He's been right all along. The original Planet of the Apes is pretty bleak. It's fatalist, misanthropic. It suggests that we're doomed, and literally says about humanity,
"Damn you! God! Damn you all to hell!"
That does it for this episode of Keynotes. On the next episode, Planet of the Apes Part 2, we'll dive into the prequel trilogy, beginning with Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Before I go, I want to list off some sources that were essential to this episode. The book Simians and Serialism by John O'Callaghan, which breaks down in great detail the music theory for the original Planet of the Apes, with a focus on its use of serialism. You can order this book on PithecosEntertainment.com. The essay Jerry Goldsmith, Film Scoring for American Movies, by Mauricio Dupuis, which gives details on the instrumentation of many of Jerry Goldsmith's scores. This is available on Amazon. The article Simian Symphony, How Apes Music Evolved from Man, by Scorekeeper, featured in Birth Movies Death magazine's Planet of the Apes issue, which gives a broad overview of the history of the apes' scores. This magazine is currently sold on mondotees.com and is full of great articles, as are all Birth Movies Death magazine releases. Speaking of Mondo, I'd like to recommend their Planet of the Apes double LP vinyl release, which has beautiful artwork by Matthew Woodson. That can be ordered through MondoTees.com as well. And finally, Film Score Monthly's review of the Planet of the Apes score, which discusses some of the influences of The Rite of Spring. You can buy an electronic subscription to Film Score Monthly on their website, FilmScoreMonthly.com. A special thanks to my very musical friends who understand music theory much more thoroughly than I do. Dustin Painter, Julie Popelka, and Linnea Snyder, who patiently field all my musical questions. You can find a Spotify playlist of all of the music tracks used in this episode on our Spotify account, Keynotes Podcast, one word, which is also linked in the show notes. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the podcast. Please subscribe, rate, review, or just leave a comment on iTunes or your respective podcast platform. or you could email us at keynotespodcast@gmail.com. You can find Keynotes on Twitter at one word at Keynotes Podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at Nick Nyland. I'm also co-host of another podcast, a more casual discussion-based show called Spinoff, which tackles new film releases and connects them to other movies. Please check it out, which you can find on Twitter at @spinoff_podcast. The link is in our bio. And finally, to play us out, here's a track from Jerry Goldsmith's Planet of the Apes score called Crash Landing. Thanks for listening. Thank you.